now our feature presentation.
Welcome to the Movie Goings Podcast, Episode 8. I'm your host, Jared Wheeler.
And I'm your co-host, Michael Wheeler.
And today we're going to be talking about two movies. Ooh. Two. The Babadook and Goodnight Mommy, both from 2014. Of course, 2014 was pretty close to when I saw these movies for the first time. And when we first started talking about actually recording an episode about them, it's been a while since we posted an episode, I think about 2.5 years. Yep. And we've had a few attempts along the way to make some more episodes, but life gets in the way, you know? But since I picked these two movies, Micah, why don't you get us started and tell us what happened? What took so long?
Okay, so I'm going to have to take some ownership of this, actually a lot of it, because you'd already seen the movies, and I really love the idea of doing these together. We'll get into just the similarities in theme. They're both horror movies, and we wanted to make this a great Halloween podcast. But I was trying to see The Babadook with a friend, and that friend had a lot going on, and so I kept pushing that back and pushing it back. Eventually, he moved, so finally got that watched. Actually, with you, Jared, about a year ago during Thanksgiving, though, so it was too late for that Halloween episode to happen. And I did see Goodnight Mommy in good time to make this podcast. Actually, 2 years ago with that same friend. And I have to say, I think it was the experience of watching Goodnight Mommy in a theater with this friend and his fiance that pushed me to want to make this podcast kind of no matter what, because it was kind of an awful experience. They didn't know what they were getting themselves into. And I felt terrible the whole time for bringing them.
So you didn't want that experience to go to waste?
Exactly. Yep. So with that said, we'll get into all this, but Jared, why did you pick these movies to begin with?
Well, you know, I don't remember at this point exactly what it was that prompted me to see The Babadook. I saw it on Netflix when it started streaming, like at the beginning of 2015, and just I really, really liked it. It kind of got into my head, and I was thinking about it for days afterwards, and I'm sure I mentioned it to you at that point, but yeah. Really, it was several months later when I saw Goodnight Mommy that I was like, I really want to talk about these movies together. I think they make a really, really interesting double feature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're both, obviously, like you said, horror movies. They're both, you know, intimately about, like, the relationship between mothers and sons and about grief and about, you know, mental illness a little bit and about... They just have a lot of these similar themes. They're weird kind of mirror images of each other. They're both
they don't
foreign
feel
films.
At all similar though. As far
right,
as
right,
the
they're very, very, very themselves. Different movies, but also not.
Right. Yeah. It's a little odd.
But yeah, they're both foreign films. But The Babadook is from Australia, and Goodnight Mommy is from Austria.
Basically,
and those are different countries. Those are. I know that. Many Americans may not know this, but those are not the same country.
they're right next to each other, though, right?
Right. I mean,
they're,
yes, I think that's
like
right.
Neighbors, and you know, really get along, talk often.
Sure. Yeah. I also think that another thing these films have in common is that watching them multiple times will be a very different experience from watching them the first time. Not in the sense of necessarily that there's just some radical revelation, but just. There are things that you come to realize through the course of the movie that will really, I think, color a second viewing in an interesting way. So,
which I wouldn't know because I've only seen both once, but I can definitely imagine.
Right. Right. And you know, there, we briefly discussed other movies that we could throw into this like mother horror movie mix.
Because there are a surprising number of them.
Yeah, more or less. I think what prompted us to resurrect this idea was the Darren Aronofsky movie Mother, or Mother!
Mother!
With an exclamation mark, which neither of us has seen yet, right?
Nope.
Which
Don't,
I feel bad about.
I'm not really like, sure I plan to be perfectly honest.
I definitely am. And the thing about Darren Aronofsky movies, and we talked about him, you know, back when we talked about Noah, is... you know, I always see his movies. He's a really interesting filmmaker who's doing really interesting work. But most of his movies, I would not want to see more than once. And this is probably one of those. But when I get around to having a chance to see it, I'll find out. And then, of course, there's, you know, there's the Guillermo del Toro produced movie Mama. And I feel bad putting just his name on it because I know that he's just the producer and there was like somebody else who actually did it based on a short film. Yeah. But anyway, yes, another mother movie.
Let's go ahead and say it was Andy Muschietti. Andy, oh, yes. We recognize you.
great work. Great work on that movie. And then, you know, it's if you just stop and think about it for a bit, there are definitely lots of horror movies that revolve around kind of a parent-child relationship in interesting ways. Even a movie like, say, The Exorcist is about this single mother dealing with this thing with her daughter. And that's not like the emotional core of the movie, maybe, but it's a thing that's in play. So you could stretch this pretty far, I think, if you wanted to do a whole list of them. And I think that relationship, obviously the nature of the relationship between a parent and a child is such that a horror movie can really exploit some of the emotional stuff going on there in terms of just fears and anxieties that we have about our children or about our parents or whatever. But both of these movies definitely get into that, some of that stuff,
but from opposite ends for sure.
Right.
And that's what I think it makes it so fun to talk about these movies specifically. So before we get any further, let's just give non-spoilery descriptions of what these movies are about. So Jared, talk to us about The Babadook.
So The Babadook, like I said, is an Australian film. It's not like super obvious that it's Australian, other than the accents of the characters. So there's nothing like massively regional about it, I think, other than that. But it's about a single mother with an elementary age son, and we come to realize through the course of the film that her husband has died tragically, and they're both kind of still dealing with that. She has a sister, but her sister has not been able to provide a lot of the support that she needs. Her son is dealing with some major behavioral issues, and he also has just extreme anxiety. He's terrified of monsters under the bed or in his closet or whatever. And so, you know, you just kind of see over the course of the movie, her frustration and her anxiety and her exhaustion kind of build without there being really anyone she can turn to for help. And then in the meantime, she discovers this really creepy children's book that she reads to her son at bedtime without really knowing what it's about, and then discovers partway through the story that, oh no, this is like this horrifying story about a monster that comes to eat things, which is just the last thing that her son needs to hear right before bedtime. And it's about this creature called the Babadook that enters the house and you can't get rid of it once it comes in. And then she starts to be haunted by appearances of this creature that very much resembles the monster from the book. You know, and I spent quite a bit of my summary there talking about just kind of her emotional experience and what's going on with her, but without even mentioning the Babadook. And it's because this is a horror movie and it's a monster movie in a lot of ways, but it's also a movie that's really about kind of what she's going through in that situation emotionally that people could probably relate to without all the monster stuff. That's really kind of the core of the movie, aside from the Babadook itself.
To be clear, though, the monster certainly doesn't take away from that journey. It just really amplifies it in really satisfying ways. Really enjoyed, and am excited to talk in greater depth about the Babadook in a minute. Before we get into that, let's talk about Goodnight Mommy. So,
yeah, tell us about that one.
Goodnight Mommy follows two twin boys whose mother is behaving a little oddly after a plastic surgery that changed, that made some changes to her face, and the boys start to suspect that their mother is not this woman who's returned from the surgery, and take matters into their own hands to figure out whether indeed this woman is their mother. And to say anything more would be spoiler. So we'll get into that later after the klaxon.
Right. I told you earlier that I had watched just today, actually, the short film that The Babadook is based on.
What's that called again?
It's called Monster. Mm-hmm. And it's on Vimeo. Anybody can watch it for free. It's pretty easy to find. but it's the same writer director, and it's actually shot in black and white, which I read that the director wanted to shoot The Babadook in black and white for a while, and then was eventually decided to go with not that instead. But she was really inspired by kind of like 50s era, like horror sci-fi kind of movies with that kind of grainy texture and everything. And you can definitely see the seeds of what The Babadook would become within Monster. There's a single mother with a son who's really scared of monsters, and he's a bit of a handful, and she's clearly kind of
overwhelmed.
Yes, exactly, with life, and he's exhausted. There's not a lot of mention of why she, there's not really any mention of why she's a single parent or anything like that. And then there's this like really creepy doll that her son has that he seems to believe is alive, and she like hides it from him. But then there's this creature that appears and just starts kind of terrorizing them. But it's, you know, it's 10 minutes long, and it's just the creature, of course, is called Monster, and there's no other name for the creature. So there's no mention of the Babadook. He looks very, very different from the creature, from the Babadook in the movie. The ending is similar, but I don't want to talk about how at this point.
Just how similar, and yeah.
Right. I did think that was really interesting. The name of the actor who played the monster is credited as, what was it? It was Trash Vaudeville, which is like the best screen name I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Also, what?
Yeah, that was wild. I don't know. Like, because the mom and the son both have very normal names. And then it was like Monster, Trash Vaudeville. Okay. All right, then.
Would not want to be his agent, or would I? Yeah.
So anyway.
So let's talk about these movies in a technical way. And in case this isn't clear, we're trying to talk about these movies as much as we can without getting into spoilers. We will get into spoilers for those of you who have managed to watch both of these movies, which might have been a little hard for Goodnight Mommy.
Or who knows that you're not going to watch them because you're not a horror fan or whatever.
Because Goodnight Mommy certainly only enjoyed a limited release. It was Austria's submission for the Oscars that year, but it ended up getting nominated. So I think there were actually probably very few people stateside who saw it.
Yeah, almost certainly.
In theaters, anyway.
Right. I mean, The Babadook gained a lot of popularity after it was released, and also it's been available on Netflix streaming. I think almost continually since that time. So a lot more people have seen it. I don't know if you're aware of this, but The Babadook has actually become something of a LGBT icon. Have you heard this?
I did hear about this, but tell us about why that.
Because Netflix apparently accidentally at some point misclassified the genre of the film as an LGBT movie.
That's amazing.
And so the internet seized upon this and ran with it.
I mean, it isn't remotely, but it's, yeah, that's kind
just
of
one of those that funny happened. Internet things of our times.
Yeah. And technically, you know, we mentioned earlier that Goodnight Mommy and The Babadook feel like very different movies. They look like very different movies. You want to get into why that?
I mean, I think you could watch both of them and never connect them to each other very easily, just because of how different they feel. The Babadook has a very claustrophobic atmosphere that grows and grows throughout the movie. It feels very stylized at points, just because of things like the design of the Babadook himself. He's got these long Edward Scissorhandy type fingers. He's got this weird, like, tall hat. And he moves in a very, I don't know exactly how to describe it. The special effects that govern the way he moves are very, like, low tech, deliberately so. So that he moves in almost a stop motion, like, jerky, very unnatural, very unsettling, uncanny sort of a way. he has a lot of like weird noises and clicks and bug sounds associated with him. And actually I think there's a running motif of cockroaches kind of emerging from him and around him and in the house connected with him.
Which is a funny connection to Goodnight Mommy.
Yes, you're right. Very strange. But a lot of the movie, not certainly not the entire movie by any means, but a lot of the movie takes place kind of in this interior space, primarily inside the main character's house. And it just kind of feels like the walls are closing in around them as time goes on. Very effective set design, and so forth in that respect. But Goodnight Mommy, of course, is it just has a very much more kind of European art house feel to it. It's kind of a slow burn, lots of long silences, lots of scenes where the camera just kind of sits there and watches something unfold, and that something may be something extremely ordinary, like a kid brushing his teeth for a minute and a half or whatever.
Well, and there are odd breaks every once in a while with Goodnight Mommy, where
the screen will go dark,
black, and it will come back, and we won't be sure how much time has passed,
or how that previous scene even resolved,
right? And what happened to the people that were just doing something weird or perfectly ordinary? Whereas the Babadook is much more. I mean, it's just incessant. It just doesn't let you go.
There's also some very, Goodnight Mommy doesn't hold your hand in any kind of way. So, like, there's some very unsettling scenes that are presumably nightmares, but through editing, kind of leads you to draw that conclusion if you're going to, but it doesn't really refer to it in any sort of way. And also, the movie, although it's unsettling in a kind of a different way, but it's not that claustrophobic kind of thing. Like the people, the characters live way out in the country. There's nothing around their house. There's woods, but the woods are far off. And so there's a lot of like open space, and the kids spend a lot of time outside, and the dread is a very different sort of dread. Certainly. The house itself is very well lit and very open.
When the curtains aren't drawn, but and the Babadook is certainly trying to scare you as much with what it's not showing you as with what it's showing you. I don't think Goodnight Mommy is trying to scare you at all, actually. But
it's certainly trying to unsettle you very deeply.
It is, yes, and it does so largely by using the camera to stare at really unpleasant things for long periods of time, which is a very different way to approach that material.
Yeah, and there's also exactly. There's some dead animal stuff and some like unpleasant scar stuff, and it has a few kind of lo-fi effects kind of things, similar to the Babadook but different, just to produce some very disturbing images. There's in particular this great shot, which I'll go ahead and talk about because it's in the trailer, where one of the boys is peeking into the bathroom as his mom is unwrapping the bandages from her head, and her face is bandaged for probably a little over half of the movie. So that adds to kind of the feeling of who is this person. So he's kind of peeking through, and she has her back to him, but there's this big magnifying mirror kind of hanging on the wall. And as he's backing out of the room, she kind of turns her head, and then her eye, which is very bloodshot and kind of scarred looking, appears like magnified in the mirror. And it's not a jump scare, even though it happens very suddenly, but it is a very kind of like, oh,
unsettling,
disturbing and powerful image.
Yeah. And, of course, things like cockroaches crawling into people's mouths, which is also from the trailer. So sorry if you think that's a spoiler. I will say something about the trailers for these movies. I think The Babadook does a really good job in its marketing and in its trailer of portraying what you're getting yourself into. And I don't feel that way about Goodnight Mommy. I think you'll get a different movie from what the trailer is portraying. And Jared, I think you probably
you gotta tell me why you think that, because I am not getting that.
So actually, to get into that, let's talk about how we feel about these movies, and go ahead. Should we go ahead and just get into spoilers? Sound this klaxon.
Sure, that's fine. So, spoiler alert. Yep.
All right. So, Goodnight Mommy. is, as I said, about these two little boys who believe that their mommy did not come home from a surgery, and that this imposter,
she's been replaced, right?
is now really about to mess up their lives, and certainly doesn't mean them any good things. And so they set about basically torturing an admission from her that she is not their mother. And the trailer certainly plays up that the mother is the villain the imposter is the villain here.
Go ahead.
Well, no. You jump in before.
I just think that. Well, I mean, we've already spotted the spoiler horn, so they took their chances at this point. But I think that the movie itself is trying for at least the first two thirds to make you question whether they're right or not. I think that you could certainly watch the movie and be like, no, this is almost certainly their mother. But I think that there are supposed to be seeds of doubt there. And I think that the movie does a good job of planting those and fostering them.
Okay. So I won't dispute that. But I think that this is, I would argue this is a movie that you would benefit from seeing without having seen the trailer. Because the movie doesn't need any
that is
help
almost
throwing
always
you
true,
in another direction.
Just for the record.
that's a discussion for another time. But certainly for this movie, I don't feel like the Babadook.
I've never seen a movie and been sorry that I didn't. Right, but I've never seen a movie and been sorry that I didn't watch the trailer first.
Fair. Okay, so what ends up happening with Goodnight Mommy is that it is these kids' mother, and actually only one of the kids is actually still alive. The other one has died somehow in an accident.
Drowned.
And
at the beginning of the movie.
At the very beginning of the movie. And the other has, in his grief, refused to accept that his twin is dead and has lost his mind a little, more than a little, and really takes it out in his grief on his mother that she has been able to move on and is willing to live in a world that doesn't include his brother.
More or less. I mean, you say that like this is all kind of internalized for this kid, right? Like, it's not like he
never says that. He never gives us his thesis.
Well, and also that's not, I don't think that's what he is consciously doing.
No.
Consciously, I think that he thinks that his mother is refusing to acknowledge that his other twin exists for him. And that's the problem that he has, less than that she won't, she won't live in his fantasy. But of course, he has no idea that it's a fantasy because he's effectively crazy on that point.
Right.
He's kind of lost touch with reality pretty deeply. And at the same time, like, I think the movie really does, well, you guessed this way earlier than I did. Like, I wasn't really watching for it, and I didn't expect it, and I was surprised when the revelation came, even though perhaps I shouldn't have been. I mean, certainly the clues are there if you are watching carefully for clues. But I think even up until the point where the mom finally reveals what's going on, the possibility existed in my mind that she wasn't actually the boy's mother. Now, that doesn't mean that I was sympathetic with them throughout that entire point. Because at some point,
though,
did it help what?
Did it help you, I don't know, not just be as horrified?
No,
by
not really.
Sequences?
I just, I'm still, I, you know.
Because I was certain once they had gotten into the actual torture, that it was their mother and that one of them was not alive, and that this was all just terrible, terrible, terrible.
Well, see, yeah, but you guessed that before I did. So, I think basically for me, it was just like, they've gone too far, even if maybe they're not wrong, because there are little bitty hints and things here and there, like, like there's this mole she has on her face that's actually just with makeup that their mother had, and they wipe it off, and she's like, well, they had to remove it to the hospital. So it's like, she has an explanation ready, but it's like, why does she have that on there as makeup then? Like, you know, so.
Yeah, some definite red herrings.
Yes, exactly. Which I was more than happy to consume.
More, please. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, rewatching it a second time, I still think that it's very, very subtle and very skillful in the way that it lays out the clues without drawing any attention to them. And, you know, I'm a viewer who typically I'm inclined to trust my eyes and to trust what I'm seeing on the screen. So this kind of thing does sucker punch me on occasion. There was nothing that kind of really raised a flag for me that one of these twins doesn't exist, because it does a really good job of being really, really careful about it. I mean, there's a scene early on where the mother gets a glass of juice and gives it to one of the twins. And then his brother whispers in his ear and he says, Lucas wants one too. And his mom's like, well, he could ask me himself then. And then I can't remember what's said, but then she says, like basically he's like, he thinks you're mad at him, or he thinks that you won't. Well, that's right. He says, you also only made dinner for me. And she goes, he knows why. and it's just like once you know what's going on and you know that the mom is kind of playing along with the living kid a little bit, while at the same time not following all the way through to kind of pull him out of it slowly or whatever. Because there's a moment later in the movie where she's talking on the phone and she's just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, he's got to face reality. But she's not rubbing his nose in the loss, but she's also not playing the game with him. And she's doing it in a way that refers to the twin, so that you couldn't necessarily know what's happening. And also, you know, just the way she's treating this non-existent twin is what helps reinforce this doubt about who this woman really is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think this is another, we opened this up with, you know, we're going to be talking about how we felt about these movies, and I did not like this movie. In case that has not been clear, I did not enjoy Goodnight Mommy. I have no plans to ever see it again. I can appreciate it. Actually, I mean, one thing I will say is that it's very skillfully made, and as you noted, goes to great lengths and does, almost effortlessly to, pull the wool over our eyes, and does so extremely well. I think I'm still trying to figure out how I knew. I think I just didn't want to be tricked that particular day for some reason. So I was like desperately looking for all the signs that it could be something other than what the movie was telling us it would be. And there are, though, we spoke a moment ago about the fact that the film will just cut scenes to black and then come back, and we don't know how much time has passed. We don't know what happened in between. And so there were clues. I think those are the clues to us that the film itself is not a reliable narrator. Which is, again, something that's very different from The Babadook. The Babadook never does anything like that. So I think it was just those cuts that led me to think,
something that happened in between. Yes, right.
Yeah.
And to me, that was just a stylistic thing. that was just kind of, you know, there to disorient you a little bit. And, you know, I don't know. It just felt like very much kind of like a point of view of the characters and a very kind of art house kind of thing that was of a piece with the longer takes, the silence that they allow to breathe within the film.
Yeah.
And all those sorts of things. How much do you think that your like negative response to the film has to do with the fact that you're not a big fan of being disturbed or uncomfortable, and how much of it has to do with the fact that you're really, really not a fan of watching a movie with people that are hating the movie that you're watching?
Okay. So that's definitely a part of it. So I was watching this with two people who, at various points, I really thought we're going to walk out, and probably should have. Like, that might have been the right choice for them.
Are these not, like, are these people who aren't fans of horror movies, or what's?
One of them is, the other decidedly not. And
why did she go?
Because she watched the trailer and had no idea that it was going
really?
To turn
but
into
in the trailer,
what it
there's
was.
Like, I don't know. There's enough really disturbing stuff in the trailer that I would think that a non-horror fan would be like, nah, I'll pass.
But there's a difference between a horror film with scares and a horror film with scenes of torture.
Right, sure, of course. So I guess the torture isn't foregrounded in the trailer, obviously, for obvious reasons. But again, I just there are definitely really disturbing things happening.
That's one of my larger problems too.
Well, go ahead.
Well, that's one of my larger problems with the movie and why I didn't like it, why I didn't enjoy it, and don't plan to see it again is I'm not putting this on you. Like, this is why you liked it, but I didn't like it decidedly because I don't enjoy watching children perform torture.
Right. I mean, for me, you know, I don't have, like, a sense of enjoyment that's closely tied to, I don't know, my sense of enjoyment in a sense is closely tied to how well I think the movie is made or whatever in a lot of respects. So being able to enjoy a movie on that level, helps me with, like, it's not like I'm sitting there, you know, having a sense of entertainment the way I would be with, like, a blockbuster popcorn film.
It's not that kind of movie.
Appreciation. Right. Exactly. But there's a particular cut, speaking of the trailer again, that I think is edited very well together in the trailer to produce a certain effect that's completely different in the movie. But the scene that it connects to is one that I want to talk about for a second. The scene where the cockroach crawls into her mouth, it kind of cuts it in a way. It shows the cockroach go in, and it shows the kid hiding under the bed, and it shows her bite down and start crunching like she's eating it. But in the film, that doesn't happen at all. She's asleep when the cockroach goes into her mouth. And then that scene where she's crunching is from earlier in the film, where the living twin sneaks into her room to see, and she's lying there asleep, and he stares at her for a minute, and he turns and goes out and closes the door. And right when he closes the door, she starts chewing on something really crunchy in her mouth, and she pulls her hand out from the cupboard, and she's got a piece of toast. So it's like she was lying there holding that bite in her mouth, waiting for him to leave so he would think that she was asleep. And that's just kind of a curious thing for her to do. And there are a couple things she does like that at different points in the movie that just kind of generally raise a suspicion of what's going on with this person.
Yeah. Why bother with that? Gosh, this is such a tricky thing to get into, because I've made my peace with trying to find meaning in every movie that I watch. And I certainly have not, I'd like to think moved largely beyond the point where something has to mean something for me to enjoy it. But I really wanted Goodnight Mommy to have a message. And I don't know that I think that it did. And that really frustrated me because I found the experience so awful that I wanted it to mean something.
Well, you know, I think that whenever you have something like scenes of torture, if it's not tied to some kind of larger emotional truth or something, then maybe that's going to bother you more.
Right.
Than
it's just like the filmmakers just put me through that for what? For nothing.
For horror, because that's the genre. And that's
right. Yeah.
That's why it's
and that's
not
what
your
you
genre.
Sign up for. Right. Yeah. So we've talked a lot about Goodnight Mommy. Is there any wrap-up thoughts about that before we jump in?
Well, you know, just that I would say that in terms of the larger meaning of it, there are things about the Babadook that I think do speak to a larger truth and that do have meaning, and I think that it's using horror for a particular purpose that Goodnight Mommy isn't. Goodnight Mommy almost feels like it's exploiting a particular kind of mental illness or symptom of mental illness, for the sake of horror, for the sake of the genre or whatever. And, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. If that doesn't bother you, then it doesn't bother you. It doesn't really bother me particularly. Obviously it does bother you. I think like that my appreciation for the movie. I think that my view of the movie is that I really appreciate it because I think it's really well made. I think that it does really good things with kind of this atmospheric growing sense of impending doom and of dread and of kind of being disturbed. And also it has what I thought was just a really great twist at the end that was written in from the beginning really, really well.
If you pull way out and you think about the story that they set out to tell, it's really tricky. And I have to admit that they did do it really well. They pulled it off. I have no quibbles with that. I don't think that they fell apart at any point, and should be applauded for that at the very least.
And it's the kind of thing I think that, you know, people are going to think about like a big twisty thing, like the Sixth Sense, where, you know, it's the whole, like they were dead the whole time kind of thing. And that's become a bit of a trope in some movies where the entire like shock value of the movie, the entire like wow factor of the movie kind of comes down to this major revelation in the last few minutes. And I think that this has that, but also even aside from that, it's just a very well made movie. So, you know, if I just heard kind of without a lot of the additional discussion that like one of the twins is dead the whole time and that's what this movie is or whatever, like it might be kind of an eye rolling thing. It's like, oh, that old thing, they trotted that out or whatever. But I think that it's the movie is a lot more than just that. You know, it doesn't hinge on just that one detail of like leading up to this big revelation at the end. And then that's the one thing that you take away from the movie. Like, whoa, they really fooled me till the end. I think it's got a lot more going on for it than that.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. I don't. Yeah. okay. So jumping into The Babadook, which I enjoyed so much more for a lot of reasons, but I want to actually let you talk about it first. So well, how like did I you said, feel about it?
Like I said, when I first talked about it, like it was a movie that really got inside my head. And that I, you know, just couldn't stop thinking about for a few days after, just kind of unpacking what all was going on in it and how I felt about it and everything. And I was really glad to watch it again with you. And watching it again with you, it was funny because, like I said, I watched it and just, I think my initial thing was just a lot of the way the Babadook himself is portrayed in the movie. So many elements that make up the characteristics of that monster are just really well done. I think, you know, the voice is just super creepy and the way he moves and just the costume design, everything is put together in a way that is genuinely frightening. In a way that kind of stays with you.
Pretty
that I really, really appreciated.
And pretty original.
Yes, exactly. And so I really appreciated that about the film. And that was the kind of the thing that kind of lodged in my brain. But then like, as I continued to like work that out over the next few days, I really started to appreciate more and more like the other side of what's going on in this movie. And, you know, kind of emotional journey that the characters are going through.
Because we haven't gotten into the spoilers of the Babadook. So what is the Babadook actually going
through? Well, the Babadook, I mean, I don't know that you want to say the Babadook is this. You could say a lot of things about what the Babadook maybe is. It's
sure. It's
grief, it's loss, it's maybe mental illness a bit that society doesn't want to deal with or talk about, and they kind of make people bury it. It's you know, a lack of a support system.
With.
It's a lot of these things. I think primarily you'll see it talked about it as like kind of grief and the inability to deal with grief. but so yeah, so like I said, like watching the movie, it just felt like I was starting to understand things about it. Because it really does also have a very big shift, I think, in perspective so partway through the movie, where for the first probably half of the movie, the kid character is just insufferable. Like he's just unbearable and you just want him to go away. Like it's just like how is she dealing with this kid? He's awful. And then And then through the second part of the movie, I don't know if it's a halfway point or what, but you know, it really kind of flips around where it's like, oh wait, no,
shoot,
that's not really what's going on here. And I'm actually really, really worried for this kid. And
yeah,
it accomplishes it that turn
the opposite
so
way from,
well,
from Goodnight Mommy. Cause you know,
right.
It's the mom who's now going after the kid.
Yes. That's the mirror image here. That I find super fascinating. Exactly. So, you know, just kind of having that realization and then kind of unpacking it in my mind over the next few days. And then when I watched it again with you, like a year and a half later, and look, you know, looking for those things from the beginning, it was like, it struck me as kind of punch you in the face, obvious almost. It was just like, oh, duh, of course, all these things that I was like realizing slowly over time for days later. It's like, oh yes, they're definitely there. They're super, super evident.
Yeah.
All that stuff is there. And you may not notice it if you're going in to watch a monster movie. But if you go in knowing kind of what's happening, it's definitely there. I don't know. So you, how much did, I don't remember how much we talked about it before I saw it for the first time.
We talked about it a lot.
Was.
So I didn't have, the opportunity to, you know, quote unquote, figure out the movie while I was watching it. I already knew what it was going for. And, I think that made me want to watch it more than I would have been interested beforehand. How I heard about it in the first place was a coworker was going to see it on a date. And I was like, why? and then you told me about it and, realized that it was much more than what I had given it credit for. And it certainly turned out to be so. And gosh, I think maybe I'm revealing that I haven't moved past, you know, looking for meaning and needing there to be some meaning from films, because this movie certainly had, I found a great deal of meaning, from it. And it has a very cathartic conclusion. And it basically in the opposite way from Goodnight Mommy, which is the opposite of cathartic, right? So that's probably why I liked it so much more. I appreciated what it was trying to say, that it said it so well, and that it wasn't just trying to scare me, but was actually contributing something worthwhile.
It's funny that you talk about it, because I think the ending is maybe not a great horror ending.
maybe
like
that's
a horror movie,
I liked it, right?
You know, ends in a few different ways. You know, there's kind of a cathartic horror ending where they think they defeated the monster, but there's maybe a question mark that lingers or whatever. Or there's like the horror movie that just ends in just pure blackness and bleakness. And this is really kind of neither of those.
Yeah, they found the other door.
But so many horror movies that I think are fantastic just fall completely to pieces in the third act. So, you know, I don't want to like hold up the typical horror ending as the ideal to strive for, certainly, because it's very hard to pull off a movie, I think, that does an amazing job of scaring you and putting you on edge and leaving you with so many questions for its first two thirds, and then resolving those in a way that's satisfying. That seems to be a very difficult thing to pull off, and most horror movies can't quite get there.
Forgive me if this is a preposterous comparison, but when I first watched The Goonies, I was quite young, and who's the character that at the beginning of the movie you think is going to be like the monster of the movie, and ends up being like their buddy.
I don't remember the name of that character, but
our listeners who have seen
the
it
one
and love it probably
the character who's like disfigured.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that this movie finds that way of turning something that you've been scared of the entire movie, that our protagonists have been scared of this entire movie, and not getting rid of that character, not making the victory this basically killing it in much the way that it was trying to kill them, but in a very beautiful way, they find a way to live with it, literally live with it. And I don't know if acceptance is the right word, but,
right. But the monster, the monster is essentially grief and loss and the empty space that these characters have in their lives after the loss of the father of the family. And so, yeah, it goes through various stages of the movie where, you know, essentially the mother in particular is kind of denying that this is a thing that exists. And then it comes to kind of like loom over them in a way that she can't deny. And it's kind of tormenting them and haunting them. And then it eventually possesses her basically. And it's, you know, influencing her actions in a very, very scary way. Or even controlling her actions in a very scary way. And you know, that's probably the most tense part of the movie where, you know, it's just, there's this sense that she may do something she can't take back when she's not in control and there's nobody around to see what's happening or to intervene, because she doesn't have a good support system. And that to me was the most impactful thing in the movie, was just watching someone who was obviously so much in need of help and of understanding and who had potentially resources available in terms of family nearby and in terms of social services. Yes. And finding her just kind of unable to get through really the gravity of the situation. And the only person who maybe understands a little bit is, you know, the older woman next door who
can't really, yes, tries, but can't,
but she can't be that person. Exactly. And that to me was the most powerful part and this kind of the scariest thing about what this movie had to say, because that's like a real life thing, you know? It's not like the boogeyman, which is essentially what the Babadook is. It's like this real thing that people deal with behind their closed doors. It could be somebody on your street and you just don't know about it.
And, you know, I think most of us can see ourselves in the main character in that particular struggle of, you know, at some point in our lives, knowing that whatever is happening, we can't or shouldn't be going through it on our own and just finding nowhere to turn.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, and then, you know, as I said, so there's a point at the film where she's actually possessed by this and it's controlling her actions in a way that's very scary. And then to kind of expel that, and that's kind of the triumphant moment of the movie in a way. But at the same time, then there's this thing, this phrase from the story, from the storybook that she's trying to get rid of, that's like, you can't get rid of the Babadook. Like, you kind of feel like there's this moment of triumph and victory, but actually it's still there. And she has to face it in a very different kind of way. And like you said, learn to live with it, learn to make a space for it within her house that isn't this destructive, malignant space, but is a space where she can acknowledge it and deal with it, and it can be there and be a part of their lives, but not a part of their lives that is tearing them up, which is also a very powerful message, I think. And that's that thing at the end where they go out in the yard and dig up some earthworms and they go take it to the Babadook down in the cellar. that's kind of the point. That's the same in Monster, the short film. The mother confronts the Babadook like in the bedroom, like it comes to her bedroom when she's reading to the boy. I guess it's the boy's bedroom, I don't know which one. And she faces it down on the stairs and screams at it and demands that it go back into its closet and not bother them again, or she's going to kill it. And then it turns around and goes down and locks itself in its closet where it's been. And then like the next morning she gets up and goes downstairs and she's getting breakfast ready. And then she gets a glass of milk and sets the glass of milk down by the door of the closet and then goes upstairs. And then the door kind of creaks open and the hand comes out and pulls the glass of milk in. But in the short film, there isn't really this context, because like I said, there's no mention of kind of like, you know, there's no father certainly, right, but there's no mention of why he's there or what's going on.
No explanation for this being an embodiment of something.
Right. Exactly. So I'm sure that that was the subtext of the short film, but it's much less clear than it is in the full-length one.
So hopefully you stuck with us for a little over 50 minutes. Hopefully you see why these movies just really do go so well together in many ways. And I, you know, for all of my thoughts about Goodnight Mommy and not wishing to see it again, I do feel very much that it was worth seeing as a way to compare and contrast it against The Babadook, which I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think at the time that I first saw them, I rated them more or less the same in terms of quality and stuff, but The Babadook is really the one that has kind of stuck with me still, even a couple of years later, that I think is rewatchable, is the one that I would recommend the most highly. If you're into horror movies, I would recommend either of them, certainly.
But certainly,
The Babadook transcends that genre a bit.
If you were to rewatch them, I mean, we talked about, of course, it would be very different on a second viewing. But I feel like The Babadook loses much less in that second viewing than Goodnight Mommy.
I mean, the reason to watch Goodnight Mommy a second time is because
you're looking for those clues.
Okay, yeah, it's like the reason you would rewatch The Sixth Sense a second time. It's like, okay, so there's this big twist. Man. Now, how well did they do in being consistent? Because it's one of those twists where it's just like, there's no way that they actually kept that. Like, there's got to be some little slip where they cheated. And so you're watching for that, you know? And rewatching it, I felt like they hadn't really cheated. And so that, you know, increased my admiration, but at the same time, I don't need to watch it a third time now. But I think with The Babadook, it does enrich your viewing a second time and even additional times beyond that, because there's so many other things going on and other layers.
Well, we've done it. 2.5 years in the making, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad that we did this, and look forward to jumping back on the bandwagon with our next film soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Happy Halloween, everybody.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of The Babadook. A rumbling sound, then 3 sharp knocks. That's when you'll know he's around. You'll see him if you look.
Babadook, dook, dook.
Sorry, buddy. Show's over.